to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive science knowledge showcase. I'm your host, Hank Green, and joining me this week, as always, is our science expert and Forbes 30 Under 30 education luminary, Sari Riley.
Hello.
And our resident everyman, Sam Schultz.
Howdy.
What is your favorite shirt? It can be anything that you put on the top half of your body. It doesn't have to be a shirt. It could be a hoodie. It could be a jackety. Well, no, not a jacket. A jacket's not allowed. I'm drawing a line of jackets.
Oh, immediately I thought of a jacket.
I know. Jackets are too easy.
A good jacket. Easy. Mm-hmm. Easy to latch onto and keep for many, many years of your life.
And you have an excuse to wear it every day. Like, no one's going to be like, oh, you're wearing that jacket again. But if you wear your favorite shirt too many times, people will be like, what's going on with you,
bud? Catherine recently hit me with the hoodie. She was like, that's too many days for that hoodie. And I was like, it's a hoodie. And she was like, no, it's been 90 days.
I mean, I'm a big favorite shirt guy. I go through favorite shirts and then wear them until they disintegrate off of my body. Mm-hmm. So I've been through many. Right now I have a shirt that has, probably I've worn it on the show before, it has a little fish on it. Love my little fish shirt.
When I was in middle school, I had a shirt that was from Banana Republic, which looking back is a very weird name for a store. And and it had on it a dog, like a hunting dog and a hunting cap. And it was just like randomly arranged. Like there was the dog and then there was the hat. And the hat was not like in proportion to the dog. And I liked this shirt. And someone made fun of it for some reason. I don't remember why, but it made me so sad. And then I found it years later. I had stuffed it behind the hamper.
Oh, Hank.
Oh, no.
Poor little Hank.
I don't even remember doing it, but I remember finding it.
You blocked it out.
It was, our little house. It had this one room that was the hall, but it was just a room, and it had a door you could close. I think it was maybe for like hurricane safety, and it was the darkest room in the house, but it opened onto every bedroom in the house. And then the hamper was in there, and that's where the
shame shirt lived.
Where you stuffed the shirt.
How long was it back there for? Years?
Years.
Nobody ever moved the dang hamper? What's going on with that?
My mom here. Yeah, we didn't clean behind the hamper for years.
Dusty, dusty hamper. My favorite shirt ever. I had a shirt where it was Marvin the Martian, and he was at Area 51 when I was a kid. I loved that one. I had a lot of great Looney Tunes shirts back in the days of the Warner Brothers studio catalog, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Great times.
Yeah, no, I don't, but okay.
Okay, well...
That was like my childhood shirts too. A lot of whatever cartoon or comic or whatever I was into at any given time became my new favorite shirt.
Do you have Pokemon shirts?
I had Pokemon shirts. I had a really good like Snoopy shirt.
Oh, okay.
I had really like whatever video game I was into. If we went to like a Comic-Con or a PAX or something, I would like save up my money and get one shirt with some video game reference that I thought was nerdy and funny and good. I think I saved up for like a Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney shirt.
Oh,
I was just like them yelling objection. I was like, this is the best design ever. And like, what a niche interest. No one else will know what it is. Or if they do, I know they're a real one.
I bet you had lots of friends in school is what it sounds like, Sari.
Yeah. Well, as we've talked about on the podcast, I certainly did not. I was a late bloomer and now I have friends.
Yes.
Children can be so cruel.
Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science topics while also trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for glory and for Hank Bucks, which I will be awarding as we play. And at the end of the episode, one of them will be crowned the winner. Now, as always, we're going to introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem this week from Sam.
A long time ago, an ancient fellow sat on a cactus and let out a bellow. He said to himself, "This I cannot abide," and invented pants to protect his backside.
Wow.
Is this true? Maybe not. Heck, who can say? But pants are something we wear to this day. And while that first pair was probably made out of skin, we've invented lots of things to make pants of since then. From denim to silk, from burlap to satin, there's a whole world of textiles that can cover your wagon. And along the way, you'll never guess what? We found textiles can do more than just hide your butt. Like be used as a sack to lug around corn, or as a soft blanket draped over a newborn. So if you're glad you don't spend all live long day nude, give it up for textiles and that one pants inventing dude.
The topic for the day is textiles, which I'm going to guess isn't too hard to define. Also, I think that leather doesn't count.
Well, the first pair of pants had to be made of leather. Then we improvised from there.
Then we went to textiles.
Yes, created from fibers. Is that maybe like fibers woven together somehow?
Sari's done a bunch of work on this. We should let
No, speculate. It's more fun if you just guess.
We are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back to figure out what the heck is a textile.
Sari, Hank, real fast, tell me what's the easiest choice that you can make of all choices.
The pizza that is currently in the fridge.
Oh, baby, I love to hear that.
Easiest choice? Take a nap, always. What do I want to do? Lay? Nothing.
That's great. Hey, here's a super easy choice, just right off the top of my head. Selling with Shopify. Now, I know all about Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, online or in person, with the internet's best converting checkout, 35% better on average compared to other leading e-commerce platforms. But Hank, why don't you tell us why you and your company, DFTBA, love Shopify so much?
We started DFTBA in 2007, and we had some non-Shopify providers early on, and switching over to Shopify was the best choice that we could have made. Now, we didn't know that when we made it, but it seemed like they knew what was going on and they were going to be around for a long time. And it turned out we were right. And now they really are the industry standard. They have a whole developer ecosystem where lots of people make products inside of their app system. And so you can always add new and cool things into your Shopify so that you can get all of the things that you need to get done for your specific business done. And I feel very kind of grateful that we picked Shopify when we did so that we have never had to switch, because switching is bad.
Wondering if you should give Shopify a try, like Hank and DFTBA are using it. Let me make that decision a little easier for you. What if all it costs to try it for a month was $1? That's right. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/tangents.
Sari, I have a feeling that textiles are not going to be super hard to do. Like, oftentimes it's impossible, but this seems possible to me. So Sam said that leather was the first pants, but that's not a textile, right?
I don't think so, but
I bet you could turn leather into a textile if you chopped it up real small.
You'd have to weave with it. Yeah. I think that textile is when you take something very long and you make it into something flat.
And the long thing is a fiber.
Well, it could be any long thing.
It can be like a plant. It can be an animal hair.
Oh,
like a wool, right? Yeah. It can be threads.
It can just be like extruded plastic, which a lot of clothes are now.
Uh-huh. It can be metal. Metal filaments are a thing. It can be carbon fiber.
Wait a second. Is chainmail a textile?
I think chainmail is a textile. I think it's like anything that is made from any sort of fiber.
Could I do it with a burrito? Could I just slice a burrito very thin?
Weave it together. Like,
I think I could.
I think you could.
Not a burrito, a tortilla.
Tortilla, yeah.
I was like, if you like lay out the tortilla and you roll it up, it's very like a taquito, but thinner.
Really smoosh it up together.
And then you like lay it like Lincoln Logs. That's almost weaving, I think.
So a textile is the product of weaving.
Weaving or non-woven fabrics, because like felt.
Oh, there's non-woven fabrics. Felt.
Felt is non-woven. Felt. And a lot of what we think about are pants or shirts or clothing.
What? Yeah. If I braid my hair, am I making a textile?
It's a great question. Yeah,
boom. It is weird. I found the way that it's hard. I feel like it's not a textile until I cut it off. So if it's attached to my head still, that's just a hairstyle.
That's a coward's thinking, Hank.
But if I cut it off, then it's a textile.
You could grow yourself your own hat. Living hat.
I do grow myself my own hat. It's well, just, it sits there all the time.
Be more formally recognizable as a hat.
Textile art comes in all sorts of shapes and sizes. Once you weave it into a textile, then you can make whatever you want, I guess. The sky's the limit.
I have woven. Do you weave?
I have in the past. I was like a hobby kid, you know, where you go to the dollar store and you find those craft kits. That's like,
yeah, you're a hobby
kid's
kid.
First loom.
I feel like there's like a above 80% chance that Sari can do like a more than one yo-yo trick.
Oh.
With more than one type of yo-yo too. I got into like normal yo-yoing. And I got into like I don't know if it has a better name, but Chinese yo-yoing.
I have no idea what that is.
The sticks
and the big.
Ball, okay.
The thing you have.
That is exactly the kind of kid I was. Yeah.
Wow. Did you have devil sticks?
Where you have two sticks and then the third stick on it.
Yeah.
And you do like throwing.
You did that? You did that too?
100%, Sam. Think of a hobby.
You're a deeply strange person.
The fact that Sari's turned out okay is great news for my son, who is a hobby kid who does not have any interest in friends. Do you weave, Sam?
I just bought all the stuff to do hobbies and never actually tried to do them. So, no, I don't weave. I took like a sewing class in middle school. My mom's quite an accomplished quilter, but I never really fell into the fiber arts.
Yeah. Sari, I have had another thought. Is a basket a textile?
Another roast.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I would say so. It's as much a plant fabric. Like if you look at rayon or any of those bamboo pants or whatever, that's just you take the wood pulp and you process it a bunch. But if you took bamboo and wove it into something, I would say that's still.
And if I just like stretched a fabric over a frame and into a basket shape, that would also be a basket. It would also have textile. So like it's a basket component of the basket and then a textile component of the basket.
Mm-hmm. This word sounds like a word, textile, that somebody invented in like the 1900s to call a factory that or something.
Mm-hmm. Or before that, like the 1600s
is when
it started being a real thing. But the root word is Latin, textilis. Which means woven, or from the word textere, which means to weave or to fabricate. So I think it meant cloth, probably, or something, or baskets or whatnot, but was more general, it seems like, because the word text, like a book text, also comes from the same root word of textere.
Because we weave. How do we weave the words? Is that it?
Is paper a textile?
Could be.
Yes.
Sometimes it's not paper, but like we used to write on textiles.
But the words are kind of like joined or fit together. And so that is your text.
I bet that's got a religious piece to it, would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. From medieval Latin, so if you go slightly closer to our time, textus meant the scriptures in addition to like a text or a treatise. So yes, it is. It's a little religious. I looked up the word fabric just because I was curious, and it was originally used to mean any sort of like anything fabricated, so metal, stone, wood, etc.
I never thought about fabricate and fabric, obviously related words.
And then in the 1700s, I think starting around 1753 is one of the earliest uses, it meant like a textile fabric or something woven in addition to that.
They needed a new word because textiles is a deeply boring word and fabric is a much nicer word for what it is, I think.
Fabric sounds so cozy and textile sounds so hard.
Cold. Yeah, cold. That's right.
And there are some textiles, and that's like the difference between them. I think all fabrics are textiles, but not all textiles are fabric because like if you have chainmail, that's not a fabric. It is hard and cold. Or if you have, I don't know, there's like geotextiles, which are the stuff that around sandbags or beneath like landfills or things like that. Like those are textiles, but they aren't necessarily fabric.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to wear one.
No, we don't want to wear the landfill garbage liner.
I don't think it would keep me warm. I'll say that. All right. I feel informed on what a textile is. And now it is time to move on to this, the quiz portion of our show, where this week we're going to be playing a little game of True Fail Textiles. Textiles play an essential role in our lives, shaping just about every aspect of our day through the clothes that we wear and et cetera. So the manufacture and trade of textiles has played an important role in shaping the economy of many countries throughout history. So today, we're going to be playing a game of Truth or Fail Express Textiles Edition. I'm going to be presenting you with a story about textile regulation, and it's up to you to decide whether it is true or false. It is so hard to remember how important clothes are and how rare it is that they're this easy to get. But we're going to learn about that right now. Fact number one, tariffs are taxes that have to be paid for different products that are being imported and exported into and out of a country. And as U.S. manufacturing increasingly goes overseas, many of those products are subjected to a tariff when they are imported to the U.S. To reduce the tariffs on shoes, some U.S. companies will add a thin bit of fabric to the sole because shoes with fabric soles are subject to a lower tariff than shoes with a rubber sole. Is this true or false?
It sounds just evil enough to be a thing that people do, huh? But no, I don't think it's true because it doesn't make any sense to have the thin layer and then someone have to cut it off or something. I don't know. It doesn't seem like practical to me.
It does not seem practical, but it seems just dumb enough to make it into law because rubber as a material may have been like rarer at one point. And so it's if it's just a fabric shoe, it's a ballet slipper, it's cheaper. So I think it's true.
It is true. In fact, the New York Times published a news article about Columbia Sportswear and the use of this process called tariff engineering, where garment designs are modified in very small ways to shift the classification of the product into a cheaper tariff. The company has designers work with trade experts to help them make these decisions. One of the examples was a boot or shoe that might have a very thin layer of fabric added to it because it will reduce the tariff from the 37% taxed on rubber soles to the 12% taxed on fabric soles. The fabric is supposed to wear off super quickly so that customers just end up with the rubber sole.
What have we built? What society have we built?
What a massive waste of time for everyone involved.
I know. I remember reading about shirts that are like scrubs are classified differently for tariffs than regular shirts. But the way that they classify them as scrubs is that they have a certain pocket at a certain height, low to the waist. And so people just started making shirts with like low pockets.
You know, business must move on and forward. Yes. Nothing can stop it.
Now I'm going to be a little conspiracy theorist when it comes to clothing. It's like, oh, my shirt's got a weird pocket. It must be classified under a different tariff, huh?
You should. I mean, every time that anything looks a little bit weird about a shirt, it's probably because somebody's trying to save money somewhere.
Trying to make a buck.
All right. Thing number two. In the 13th century, the Flemish cloth industry was immensely successful, which led to an unfortunate rise in others producing their own counterfeit Flemish textiles. To counteract this fraud, Flemish spinners developed a fiber for weavers to integrate into their products to market as theirs. The fiber would dissolve in water, allowing it to be removed after the textile was sold. Is that true or false?
Huh? So like it was visible until you like dipped it in water or something, or?
Yeah. So it was like in the textile. And then when people would buy it and be like, yes, I could see, but like it wouldn't affect the overall long-term look of the
a Flemish fabric. Original. Sure. This seems like very similar to the last one, which means maybe that it's true. I'm just going to go with true this time. I should have trusted myself last time.
I think this one seems fake just because there's water too many places. People are sweaty. Shoot. You're going to sneeze on this shirt.
I'm such an idiot.
Well, I don't think it's meant to last a long time.
It's not meant to last long, but it's got to make it a little bit far. You got to make it to the point of sale. And
somebody spill a cup of water on the pile of shirts.
Yeah, you don't walk around with your open water bottle as you're browsing Banana Republic and
Flemish and woven clothing.
13th century Flemish market.
Yeah.
Well, it is in fact false. Congratulations, Sarah. You're running away with it. It is inspired by two things, though. The first is the fact that apparently saris made from Mysore silk are given a ID number that is embroidered into that sari. So you know where it is and and where it comes from. The second is a recent project developing a fiber to serve as like a barcode on fabrics that can help identify the contents of the fabric. Because it's important to be able to identify the contents of a fabric for recycling purposes. Oh, but that could be difficult when labels are usually worn out or removed, and techniques to study the fabric chemically might not be able to identify the exact blend of the fabric. Hmm. They can actually like somehow weave into the fabric an identifiable way of saying like what exactly this fabric is made of, which is wildly complex now. All right, last thing, last chance to come back, Sam, is story number three. To encourage the growth of its own industries in the 17th century, England wanted to find a way to get its citizens to buy wool in place of other fabrics, particularly linen that was imported from France. So Parliament passed the Wool Acts of 1667 and 1677, which stated that people had to be buried in a wool shroud in place of other fabrics, and that failure to comply would result in a fine of £5.
Anything to stick it to the French, I bet they would do. So I'm going with true.
Even why the not? Dead, even dead English people have to stick it to the French.
That's I could also see them having too many sheep and being like, oh, freaking hell, we like sent all the people to Australia and now they're sending us wool. Like we've colonized too much. We've have too many sheep all around the world. And now we need to trick our
to
people
bury some wool.
Yeah. Bury some wool. Yeah, put it somewhere.
We need more single-use wool.
So, yeah, I think it's true also.
All right. Well, it is true. They did do this. The act, and I have a quote from it, said, "No corpse of any person, except those who shall die of the plague, shall be buried in any shift, sheet, or shroud, or anything whatsoever made or mingled with flax, hemp, silk, hair, gold, or silver, or in any stuff or thing other than what is made of sheep's wool only." Somebody at the end there was like, they, we were like making a list, and then they're like, just put in anything.
Yeah. Stuff or thing. Yeah.
Any stuff or thing.
That's like you're going to your friends to be like, okay, name all the things you'd wrap a dead person in. And then they're like, I can't think of any more. Well,
what about
put
stuff?
In stuff. Yeah,
it's kind of a surprise to me that in 1677 they used the word stuff like
stuff.
That. Stuff feels much more modern to me. It seems like we just now realized that like we could have stuff.
It's a vital word. You gotta have stuff. What else are you supposed to say? Things. I guess you could say things.
Do you think it maybe was stuff in like fluffy things, like how Winnie the Pooh is full of stuff and fluff? So
I don't know. I can't DM them. They don't have Twitter.
Yeah.
They're all buried in woolen sacks.
Yeah. We'll have to do a tangents episode about stuff so you could tell us, you know, where it came from.
Where stuff came from.
Like, we could also do some necromancy and like ask them, be like, what did you mean by stuff here?
So the exception for people who died of the plague was apparently because there were concerns that the wool might stay infected for 3 to 4 years. And now I'm thinking that you like, would take the wool back, which I don't feel like is what happens. Linen was the common shroud of choice for both traditional reasons and because linen was accessible to the poor and to the rich, but the government wanted people to buy more wool, and the shroud ruling was one way to make that happen. We don't know how it went, really, but the law was repealed in 1814, probably because England's economy was not super wool reliant by then. All right, Sari got all of those right.
Good
Sam
job,
got
Sari.
Just one. We're going to take a quick break, then we'll be back for the fact off.
SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Money is annoying. You have to remember so much stuff, like your bank account password and your PIN number. You got to balance your checkbook, and I don't even know what that means to balance your checkbook. You got to put all your receipts in a folder or something probably too. And who has time for all that? Not me, the old money dummy himself. But if you don't manage your finances, there can be dire consequences. Like maybe, for instance, you pay your utility bill twice, huh?
You know, we all make mistakes. We all move sometimes. My partner and I moved recently. I didn't think to check the old utility accounts, but then I was doing my taxes and going through all the utility bills. And we logged into our old account and I was like, what the heck? There's a couple hundred dollar bill here for an apartment that we don't live in anymore. Mm. What's going on here?
The electric company's just like, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I was just too busy and too tired to figure out that out until mid-February when I was like, oh, shoot. But boy, would it have been easier if we had an app that said, you're paying your utility bill twice.
The unfortunate truth of the matter is it's important to keep on top of your finances. But the fortunate truth is that Rocket Money exists. Rocket Money gives you a clear view of your expenses, letting you see your spending in one place at a glance. Rocket Money gives you the power to easily track your monthly spending, create custom budgets, and even find and cancel unwanted subscription services and also potentially utility bills for old apartments you don't live in anymore. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when you use all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use, like subscription services, and stop paying your power bill twice, like I almost did. Thankfully didn't. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and manage your finances the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/TANGENTS.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's time for the facts. Our panelists have all brought science facts to present to me in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they have presented their facts, I will judge them and I will award Hank Bucks any way I see fit. But to decide who goes first, here's a trivia question. Sumptuary laws are laws designed to regulate consumption, including people's clothing. And in England, one such law was passed with the goal of trying to protect the cap industry. The Cappers Act, this is real, of 1571 required males above a certain age, except for nobles, to wear a woolen cap on Sundays and holidays.
Oh my God, holidays. They were obsessed with this stuff.
The wool.
Yeah.
Once again, 300 years in the past.
Everyone's so toasty and itchy.
This is like a guy who was friends with the king. He was like, buddy, I want to make some money today. Yeah. What was the age above which males were required to wear a woolen cap?
What is an appropriate age for a fella to start wearing a cap?
No, for a fella to be forced to wear a cap.
Okay.
At what point? Please.
Yeah. Can you force a 2-year-old to wear a cap? No.
Probably not. Like, no.
Just on Sundays. Come on.
You can't find a 2-year-old.
Yeah, I suppose who's young enough for them to have said, you're in financial trouble now, young man. I would say it's probably pretty young, like 12.
That's the range I was thinking, too. Like a little newspaper boy.
Yeah.
You got to wear a wool cap. And you are only 9 years old.
The answer, it's 6.
That's too little.
6-year-olds wear caps.
That's too little to bully and fine somebody.
No, the king can do whatever the king wants to do. Yeah. The act was, however, repealed in 1597. So it was only around for a couple dozen years. But, you know, there was a lot of good caps at the time, apparently. By the time this law was repealed, hats had been sort of forced to be so in style that they didn't really even need it anymore.
Oh, everybody just loved hats. It worked.
It worked. They did it. The fashion changed.
They tricked people into liking hats.
I love how they just like left out the nobles. They were like, you guys who have lots of money don't have to buy the extra thing.
You crazy kids are buying all kinds of hats, probably. You're not the problem.
You don't wear it. Your hat's probably from France.
Yeah. Oh, boo, boo.
Boo, boo. All right. That means Sarah gets to go first.
So one of my much repeated takeaways from studying biology is that it is a freaking miracle that anything in our bodies works because there are so many ways for things to go wrong.
Yeah.
For example, in developing human fetuses, there's a hole in the heart called the ductus arteriosus that connects the pulmonary artery, which typically carries deoxygenated blood from the heart to the lungs, with the aorta, which typically carries oxygenated blood from the heart to the rest of the body.
That's like one of the main places you wouldn't want to have a hole.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want those blood streams to mix in our adult bodies because those are very different types of blood. But this opening is a normal part of development because a fetus's lungs are not breathing air yet. They are filled with amniotic fluid, and the fetus gets oxygenated blood along with nutrients and other important life things through the umbilical cord from the placenta. So in many cases, this hole closes up after the baby is born and it's no longer fluid-filled lungs start doing their thing. But sometimes it doesn't close, and babies are left with what's called patent ductus arteriosus, or PDA, which is one of several kinds of holes that are considered congenital heart defects. And it turns out that these sorts of unclosed heart holes are more prevalent in children who are born at high altitudes, possibly because of the lower atmospheric pressure and lower concentration or saturation of oxygen molecules in each breath. Plus, the shapes or sizes of these high-altitude congenital heart defects can't always be fixed by the commercially available medical devices out there, which generally are permanent implants that are designed to be inserted with a cardiac catheter and then expand to fill the gap. They are a woven wire mesh. So I've gotten to the point. They're textile. my fact is on topic. There's just a lot of biology context first. And you can look them up. They're generally called PDA or ASD or duct occluders, which are fancy names for these like wiry structures. And coupled with that difficulty, different high altitude places have different access to medical technology supply chains and financial resources and trust in various procedures. So a doctor named Franz Freudenthal, who lives in La Paz, Bolivia, which is around 12,000 feet or 4,000 meters above sea level, he's a pediatric cardiologist who often treats indigenous Aymara children with these kinds of heart defects. And he published a paper in 2018 about how he worked as part of a team of doctors, biomedical engineers, and Aymara weavers to co-create a new device to fill these heart holes. So specifically, they settled on a traditional textile design called the Andean cross or Chicano weaving pattern. And the device is woven from a single strand of nickel titanium alloy called nitinol by Aymara craftswomen. The paper says they undergo about 4 months of training to learn the exact device specs. And then they weave on a circular mold instead of a big flat loom. And small devices take around 3 hours to weave, but larger devices can take like around a day and a half. And the researchers also say that this specific pattern is too complex for current machines to replicate. And so far, these devices have successfully passed regulation and have been used to seal up congenital heart defects in children and adults in these like high altitude South American places. And the paper also calls out the cultural significance of having these like handmade medical devices and combining traditional textile skills with modern medicine, which is like very lovely to think about. These people get to carry that blend of science and art with them quite literally, like in their hearts.
Sari, that is so cool.
Thanks. I've been slacking this season. I've been so sad this season. I've been losing. I came in with a banger this episode. I'm so proud of finding this fact
that
too.
Is so cool. That's got everything. It's like New York's hottest club.
Yeah.
It's got duct occluders. It's got babies with holes in their hearts. It's got high altitude Andean mountains. It's got indigenous craftswomen. It's got nickel titanium alloys. It's got everything.
And no one's talking about it. There's like this guy did a TED talk in 2016, and there's like one or two articles since then, but it's like the paper was published. It's like a miracle that I found this. The internet offered it up to me in my manic Googling and was like, please share this story on your podcast because no one else.
Wild. What a thing to like be both like conscious of like the need to be, you know, like who are you going to trust? Like this random person from out of nowhere, but also to be conscious of like how like, you know, how, like can we use the like abilities of this community that we don't have to help like solve two problems at once.
Working with the people you're trying to help. It's the way to do things.
Well, Sam, what's the thing that's going to not change your fate?
Well, I don't know. You don't know.
I don't. You're right.
Space travel. It's one of the pinnacles of science, technology, and the indomitable human spirit. Exploring space can offer us insight into the very origins of our universe and humanity's role in it. Space travel is also, on a practical level, pretty disgusting because astronauts are up in the space station. They're crammed in a tin can with a bunch of other sweaty nerds. Everything's floating around. Bodily fluids are floating around. Your ass is floating around when you're trying to take a crap in the toilet. There's mold. There's dust, there's grime. We've covered a lot of this on previous episodes of SciShow Tangents, by the way. Explore the back catalog, everyone, won't you? Yeah. But there's one indignity of space exploration that we haven't really talked about on Tangents, and that which I've never really thought about before, and it's the fact that astronauts can't wash their dirty undies. And that makes sense. Hmm. So first of all, I feel like a spin cycle on a space station probably is a bad idea. Doesn't seem like it would work. But also,
yeah, it would.
You think so?
Yeah.
You don't think my washing machine always goes like this?
Yeah.
If that started happening on the space station, you're in trouble.
It's true. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's how Gravity, that movie Gravity, happened. but also, water is really heavy, so space agencies try to launch only as much as their astronauts will need for like drinking and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know, it isn't heavy. Standard issue astronaut underwear. So instead of washing anything, astronauts are sent up with all the socks and the shirts and the pants and the underwear that they'll need for the duration of their stay. They wear them until they're too gross to wear them anymore, which seems to be about a week, according to a NASA press release, and then shoot them off to burn up in Earth's atmosphere along with like all the rest of their garbage.
Man, that's basically how I did it in college.
Yeah, right? And that said, there's a certain freedom in just shooting your dirty laundry into space. That sounds great. But the idea is that someday astronauts will be establishing permanent bases on the moon and beyond. So throwing away all your dirty laundry, it's not really going to work in the long term. Plus, while everybody has their own personal underwear, spacesuits have a sort of communal pair of high-tech long johns that go on over your astronaut diaper when you go out for a spacewalk. Everybody's got to share this one pair of long johns. And that can get both very nasty and can't be shot into space. It's important. So finding a way to eke out any semblance of hygiene is paramount to astronauts. So one way that various space agencies are trying to fight the plight of crusty undies is by developing new fabrics to make them out of course. In 2009, astronaut Koichi Wakata was sent up to the ISS with experimental antibacterial underwear that he could wear for a month at a time.
And all the articles, he so chose.
He did, and he did choose. He also said that he didn't tell anybody that he was doing it. Like they gave him like a secret mission almost. Wear these for a long time.
That's like he definitely told other people. It's like it's a secret. Sorry. Yeah.
They're not just always asking each other about their underwear up there.
I mean, they might be. They're finding a lot to talk about. All the articles that I could find about this said that the used underwear were currently being studied to gauge their effectiveness, but I never found any follow-up about that at all. So I can assume that they either didn't work at all to a catastrophic degree, or they worked so well that it was boring and nobody wanted to write about it.
I mean, how do you test?
Yes,
because I know how I test.
You scrape it. You put it in a machine.
You give it a little sniff.
So then more recently, in 2021, the ESA teamed up with the Vienna Textile Lab to make a textile with microorganisms integrated right into it that create antimicrobial, antiviral, and antifungal compounds to get rid of other, more stink-causing microorganisms. But that still seems to be undergoing testing to see if it can like survive in space. But I will point out that there are things that can dirty your underwear that aren't just microbes. So I feel like, you know, you're not going to do anything about the streakies or whatever. And finally, NASA's just trying to build a washer-dryer unit that can be sent to the moon to do laundry. But since everything in space needs to be a little bit disgusting, they also need to develop a water treatment system that would be able to make the detergent and grime-filled laundry water drinkable again. After hearing all of that, learning all of this, my solution to the problem is this. Naked astronauts?
I mean, somebody's had to have thought of it by now, right?
It seems very logical that you'd just be floating around up there naked to be.
As long as you can make sure everybody smells okay. Sometimes I think that the clothes provide that service.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Keeping
maybe
the inside right. smells inside a little bit.
Yeah. Do the inside smells float out of you because there's no gravity, though, anyway?
I don't know if that affects it, but I am convinced that a spin cycle on a space station is a bad idea. At first, I was like, what? That's fine. But you'd really have to balance that centrifuge because you don't want a bunch of jiggles.
And my washer and dryer, if that's anything to go off of, I'd be dead in space for sure.
All over the place.
Yep.
Gosh, stinky underpants or the best fact ever.
That's fine. I did a bad fact on purpose this week, so Sarah could win. So there you go.
Your generosity. Yeah.
Congratulations, Sarah, on taking this one home handily. I'm going to go ahead and send 500 Hank bucks right your way.
Wow, you never send me anything. I never get nothing when I win all the time.
I forget that they exist, okay? And now it's time for Ask the Science Couch, where we ask a listener question to our virtual couch of finely honed scientific minds.
Hail on Discord and at Mars Tina on Twitter ask, why can't machines crochet? We've been making knitting machines for hundreds of years.
Boy, you definitely found an area that I could never pull this one out of my hat. Like, that's, I got nothing.
What, you didn't do knitting or crocheting as your type of textile making?
No. Well, knitting, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think that, like, first of all, sewing machines, I don't really understand how they work. And I know that they are very weird and complicated. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't, like, pass the needle through over and over again. It goes through and then it, like, pushes something through and then it pulls it up and then it goes through again and then it pushes. So it's different from, like, you know, like a normal, whatever that's called. I forgot
hand
the name of the stitch
or something.
But, like, stitch where you just go in and out.
Yeah, well, right. I'll do my best. I've also knit before. I've not crocheted before. So knitting machine is different than a sewing machine, and crocheting machines
for sure
don't exist.
Interesting. That's awesome and weird.
So sewing, you are taking a thread and you have fabric. So you have a textile already, and then you're kind of like joining things together. With knitting and crocheting,
you are making a fabric.
You are making a fabric through taking a thread like yarn and weaving it or knotting it to itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've seen knitting machines, knit sweaters are obviously made by machines.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I've seen the machines that make socks, which are also knitting machines. But I did not know that you could not make a crochet machine.
Yeah. And it's because of the difference between the way that you weave the yarn in and loop it in itself in knitting and crocheting. So the way that knitting works, and the problem is this is a very visual thing, and I don't know enough about textiles, but I'll try my best, and then hopefully people will either understand or look it up in our sources, because I included some people who talk about it better than I do. So knit fabric is basically formed by pulling yarn through a row of previous existing loops. And knit fabric, if you look at it really closely, you see pretty regular rows and columns of stitches. So in those hand crank knitting machines, they're a circle or something or a straight line, and you go row by row and you create more fabric. And so there's always a closed end of it where it won't unravel from, and then there's an open end where all those loops on that end, if you dropped the string from it, it'll unravel pretty quickly. And you can make patterns to some degree while knitting by adding loops in different ways. You can remove loops. You can use cables to change the order of the loops, which makes those crisscrossy patterns in those wool sweaters or something. But regardless of what you do, there's still going to be this raw edge from which everything can unravel. Crocheting, on the other hand, is a different form of loop building that works with one needle, one hook, as opposed to two needles. And you go one stitch at a time. So every time you make a loop, you close it off. And so whatever you're doing, even if you're making a row of a bunch of loops, it'll unravel much slower than a knit project because you have to undo one knot at a time. And because you're working with one hook, there are also a bunch of different crochet stitches that you can do. So you can pick up three loops and wrap around backwards. So you can wrap around forwards. You're manipulating the yarn with one hand and you're manipulating the hook with the other. And so while knitting is this big row, you're doing basically the same thing. You're just making more loops upon more loops upon more loops. Crocheting, there are so many different hand movements and ways in which you can create more stitches. And the things that you can make with crochet can hold more 3D shape because you can just decide to add loops, one-off loops, more flexibly than with knitting. And that is much, much harder to program a machine to do. Machines are so good at repetitive processes. So you can make knitting machines, but a crocheting machine is much harder. And it's not profitable to make a crocheting machine because if you want a fancy border or a custom, you want to make an infinity scarf with cat ears on it or something, you can use a knitting machine to make the scarf part or the hat. really, really fast. And then for the custom like 3D parts, you can crochet those extra little bits by hand.
Are you saying that it is possible?
Depending on what kind of crochet stitches you use. Like there are some simpler, I think. Mm-hmm. I've not crocheted, but yeah. I think there's some simpler like chain stitching that would maybe be easier to have a machine do regularly. But like all of those like 3D stuffed plushies or anything, those require so many different stitches that it would be really prohibitively expensive to program a machine to manipulate things in that way.
You really don't want your machine to make a single mistake. So it makes sense. Like that, like I feel like everything would just completely fall apart. Knitting, I guess, is just much simpler, but I will not understand until I crochet, I feel like, to some extent.
Yeah.
Are you still a hobby guy? Do you still ever pick up any new ones?
Oh my God, Sam, what do you think I do with like all of the time? What do you think this is?
Okay. I guess I was really trying to gauge what level of thing you consider a hobby.
Yeah, no, I became a stand-up comedian for a little while.
Yeah, right.
If you want to ask the Science Couture questions, you can follow us on Twitter and Threads at SciShow Tangents, where we will send out topics for upcoming episodes every week, or you can join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on our Discord. Thank you to @Bucky's Revenge on YouTube, @JCYB on Twitter, and everybody else who asked us your questions for this episode. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's super easy to do that. First, you can go and listen to 5 episodes this week. You can also go to patreon.com/scishowtangents to become a patron. If you're wondering about that, why we're saying that is because Apple changed some rules, and so
yeah,
we're behind on
delivering. We're like busting all our beans.
Have extra advertising impressions right now. It will go back to normal soon.
You know what JCYB stands for?
No.
Ja Country's Yest Bogart.
That's why you stick around at the end, everybody. You can join us on our Patreon. You can get access to great stuff like our movie commentaries, which do exist. Some bonus episodes, which are very good. Shout out to patron Les Aker for their support. Or third, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show, and it helps other people find us. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just
tell people about us.
Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Jess Stempert. Our associate producer is Eve Schmidt. Our editor is Seth Glitzman. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz Bazzio. Our editorial assistant is Kabuki Chakrabarty. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Menish. Our executive producers are Nicole Sweeney and me, Hank Green. And of course, we could not make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted. But one more thing. Cellulose is a structural polymer in plants that comes in lots of different forms. For example, cellulose fibers from flax plants can be spun into linen, or fibers extracted from wood pulp can be processed into semi-synthetic rayon fabrics. And in 2016, the Dutch artist Jalia Essaidi decided to engineer fabric from the cellulose in dried cow manure. She showed off some dresses made of this poop-derived fabric in a fashion show, but it understandably has not taken off in the textile industry.
Classic art student shit, right?
You would know better than
stuff
us.
Like that. Yeah. I'm sure I saw multiple things made of poop when in my time at art school.